You heard Nyquist winning that Breeders' Cup Juvenile back in October at Keeneland. He is one of the Pro Tem leaders of the three-year-old division going into 2016. One of the future book favorites for the Kentucky Derby, and nice enough to join us now is the author of one of the most popular Derby pieces throughout the season. You can find it at bloodhorse.com. It begins this Monday. It's the Derby Dozen, and it is authored by the great Steve Haskin. Steve joins us now, and this is the first time I'm talking to Steve since he has been elected to the National Museum of Racing's Joe Hirsch Media Roll of Honor. Steve, congratulations.
Thank you, Anthony. I appreciate that. That was an unbelievable honor. It really was.
What's the deal? Are you part of the ceremony this year? Are you part of the ceremony this year?
No, it's the for the Hall of Fame for this. You mean
yeah.
A special thing that I think they usually hold that. It'll be at a luncheon in Saratoga, and then the two plaques will be put up at that time.
Beautiful. Okay. Well, we'll have our own celebration at Novi one night when you're up there this year.
Sounds good to me.
Oh, your favorite spot, Piccola Busola, when you come in for the Belmont this year. You can leave that up to you.
It doesn't take much to get me to Piccola Busola, you know, especially now that I'm sort of semi-retired and I'm not going to be covering these races anymore. I need incentive to go all that way, but that certainly is. And listen, if you know any really good Italian restaurants in Saratoga, I know a few, but anytime you want to get together up there. And never turn my back to an Italian meal. You know that.
I know that. Believe me, I know that. Talk, Steve, before we get into the Triple Crown Trail, in our time, and of course Acacia joins us here, in our time, you are, you're the authority for guys like me, gals like Acacia who, have grown up in this digital age and, to get the Derby Dozen every week at Blood Horse and hanging with Haskin and all the other stuff you did for the website. And, of course, I remember all the stuff you did in the early days of the Racing Form and stuff. What's it like now to not have, like you said, you're semi-retired. What's it like to have some extra time on your hands after just pounding the pavement for all those years?
Oh, I love it. I really do. It's great because I'm getting to do what I love to do, but at my own pace and my own leisure. I still love writing my column, and I've been writing more than ever, and I still love doing the Derby Dozen. So I'm really enjoying both of those. But I don't have to worry about deadlines anymore, about features, about things I don't want to write about. I don't have to worry about regional features in the magazine. Listen, when the Kentucky Derby is over this year for the first time in, 30 years or so, when the Kentucky Derby is over, do you know what that means? It means I go out to dinner with my wife, and it means I don't have to hang around Churchill Downs until 10 o'clock at night chasing after and then having to write a 3,500-word recap the next day. Listen, it was great when it was, when I did it, but when you do it for that long and then you have to drive home at 4:30 in the morning, 11 hours on Monday, and you start falling asleep on the Pennsylvania Turnpike. you start saying, you know what? I think it's time to stop pushing it, and I'm just going to enjoy the Derby this year as a fan. Of course, I'll still have my column. I'm still going to try and write about a different angle, take personal touch to the Derby, but I don't have to accumulate all that morass of biographical data and background material on every single horse and then hope that one of those horses that has a good story wins the race. You sit there all day on Derby Day and say, I remember when Mind That Bird won, I said, oh my God, I might as well have gotten here 5 minutes before the race. I said, I have nothing. How many times I walked by this cowboy on crutches standing outside his barn, and I said, I'll get to him tomorrow. and tomorrow never came. And I said,
when
I heard his name called, I said, oh my God, I don't believe
it. My mind, that bird story is equally as as shocking. I was down there. It was only my second Derby, and there was a guy in front of me who was listening to my opinion all day, and I kept running second all day. So he turned to me, and he was an old cowboy from Texas, but he had plenty of loot. And he said, "Now, Anthony, you've been picking horses that run second all day, but you keep telling me how good the winners look on the track. Just tell me the five best-looking horses." So I picked out five, and two of them included Mind That Bird and Pioneer of the Nile. And
oh,
he made
wow.
$100 exacta box of the five I gave him, and I didn't stick
what?
Around.
So did you bet? Did you have that exacta?
I did not.
Nice.
I did not. So, yeah, Mind That Bird. But are you going down to the Derby, Steve?
No, I'm not going to fight that crowd if I don't have to. I don't know.
I hear you.
I tell you, the Derby is one thing that it. I mean, it is. I don't tell you, it is so crowded. You literally cannot move an inch. And you know, when you're covering the Derby, you know, you've got the they don't have a press box anymore. The press area that they have, you know, some kind of sanctuary. But even that gets crowded, and you wait all day. And I always like to go to the backstretch early and just hang around the backstretch. But, you know, if I go there, what am I going to do? I'm going to apply for credentials just for what? You know, just to go out there and hang around the backstretch. Plus, you know, listen, I can't afford a hotel there anymore. You know, I'm not covering the race for anybody, so I can't expect anyone to pay for a hotel. So there's really no reason to go down there. I mean, listen, if somebody... if one of the owners or somebody had a box and, you know, they invited us, me and my wife down, you know, then I would consider it just staying in, you know, in a box and enjoying the Derby from there, enjoying the atmosphere. But if I have to fight the crowd, there's no way. I'm not big on crowds, and that is the ultimate crowd.
Yes, it is.
The Derby is definitely the ultimate crowd. Steve, I know that your blog, Hanging with Haskin on Blood Horse, has been really popular, and it's one that I've enjoyed reading as well. And you wrote a post, Say Goodbye to Louisville, where you kind of shared some of your favorite Derby memories and the stories that we've seen. Of course, this year in 2015, we've had an amazing story with the Triple Crown winner and his following Breeders' Cup win. Do you think that there is something specific that makes a good story, or does it just kind of fall in your lap?
No, it usually falls in your lap, but you know, a lot of times it falls in your lap before the race, like Smarty Jones. I mean, that was a story just waiting to be told, and I said, "Oh my God, I'm rooting for this horse." There was so many elements to the Smarty Jones story. You know, you're talking about a horse that was Pennsylvania bred, the owner, they got rid of all their horses because their trainer was murdered. And then they wind up, you know, keeping these three little weanlings and giving them to this new trainer, you know, John Service, that they had never used before. And then the horse bashes his eye on a starting gate and it's almost blinded. And he got blood pouring from his eye and he has to have surgery. Yeah, and he goes on to be an undefeated Kentucky Derby favorite. Plus, I happened to, you know, when I was on the backstretch, one of the parts of that column you referred to.
Mm-hmm.
I just happened to be in the right place at the right time with that horse. I was always there, you know, when something was happening. And I just said, listen, if this horse wins, this story is already written. I have very little to do. I had so much background material on the vet who did the surgery, Patty Hogan, people from Philadelphia Park. And when he won, it was just that was a real pleasure to write that story. It was great. You know, a lot of times, you get like stuff. The funny thing is about Mind That Bird is that I wound up getting an awful lot of material on him. But you know who I wound up getting it from? After the race, from Chip Woolley's girlfriend. I mean, she provided me with, they left New Mexico at 6:10 a.m. They arrived They arrived wherever they stopped at the next morning at 12:40, and then they got left here. And they gave me, she gave me the exact times and everything about Chip and how he, or about his personality that he didn't share with anyone. If you remember, he had that infamous interview with Kenny Rice afterwards, where it basically blew him off. It took him a while to adapt to the press. He was much better by the Preakness, but. You know, he wasn't the greatest interview, the greatest person to deal with before that. So so that was a story that basically fell into my lap with everybody else, but afterwards, but from a different angle. You know, you're trying, the main thing is to try and talk to different people. You know, you don't want to talk to the usual people because you're going to get the same stuff anybody else does. So you try and find other people to get you, to move through that same maze to get to the way you would be, but in a more interesting way. And like a typical example would be Chip Woolley's girlfriend. And, you know, spoke to a lot of other people and wound up putting a, you know, putting that story together. But every racing, every derby has a story. You just have to, some are better than others, but you just have to hope it's a good story, whether it's about the horse, whether it's about the owner, the trainer, the jockey, or the breeder. You know, so Fleet Alex was a horse. He didn't win the Derby, but he had a, you know, multi-level story from so many different angles, which I was able to use after the Preakness of Belmont. So, and then, listen, sometimes you get a challenge. Sometimes you say, you know what, I don't have a lot. I'm just going to have to make this a story. You know, you just try and make, you know, pate out of chopped liver.
We're talking to Steve Haskin. Of course, you can catch his Derby Dozen starting this Monday at bloodhorse.com. How great was it to go out with the Farrow story, you know, as a full-time full-time on the beat, and after banging your head against that proverbial wall on the Derby Trail all those years, and Triple Crown Trail, to go out on top like that with a Triple Crown winner?
Well, it was the ultimate. I was kind of hoping, you know, I had that horse on top from, you know, right from the beginning.
Yes, you did.
The only excuse I gave when people said, how could you put a horse on there who's injured, who doesn't want to go a mile and a quarter, who's a front runner, how do you put a horse like that on top? And I, you know, and the main thing I said in my Derby Dozen every week is that the only reason he's here is that he has the potential to be a superstar, because this horse has every single thing you look for in a horse. And he's got this incredible stride. He's got the personality. He had everything about him that just rang it to me, a potential superstar. So I followed him, and I kept saying to myself, boy, I said, if, and I knew ahead of time, obviously, I was gonna resign from the Blood Horse. And I said, you know, it has to be. It just makes too much sense that this is the year. And when he won the Derby and the Preakness, I was pretty confident. I said, this is going to be it. This is going to be my last Belmont recap, and I want to make it my ultimate Belmont recap. And so I just, you know, you have that feeling inside all along that all the pieces are going to come together because of the fact that this is going to be my last Triple Crown that I'll be covering. So it certainly worked out that way.
2015 was certainly a good year for racing fans. Steve, looking ahead to this year, Nyquist is currently at the top of the leaderboard, and we've seen a lot of buzz about him, particularly with the Eclipse Awards. Also, quite a bit of buzz about Mohaman. Any strong feelings from you on either of those two or another horse leading up to the Derby Trail?
Well, for me right now, it's really tough. Trying to come up, and I know it's coming up Monday, and I have a pretty good idea who I'm going with, but it's tough coming up with a number one this year, and it's not because it's a bad crop or anything. It mm-hmm. happens to be a good crop, but there are so many horses that are so close together without one being a standout. You know, as far as Nyquist, I'm probably going to have him ranked at number four, and even though he's undefeated, he's a winning machine, he does whatever he has to do to win. And I do believe this horse can get a distance, although a lot of people believe he can't. But I just don't know if that distance is going to be a mile and a quarter. Then I heard that, you know, he's going to make his debut in the San Vicente, assuming the track is okay at San Anita and he doesn't have to go up to Golden Gate to make his first start. But if they made the announcement that he's going to make his first start in the San Vicente, I loved it, because that's an art of training that you don't see anymore, bringing a horse back in a sprint race. I mean, if you go back to all the great horses, you can go back to, let's take the Triple Crown winner, Secretariat, Affirm, Seattle Slough. You can go back to Citation, Whirlaway, Count Fleet. All those horses all debuted at three in a sprint race, and it's not done anymore. And John Heywood always told me when we used to discuss that, because I told him how much I love that. He says you want to give a horse a sharpener. You know, you take a horse like Mohamed. Mohamed's, he's already won at a mile and an eighth, which I think could be too far. It's the reason why no Remsen winner has won the Derby in 22 years. In fact, only one, Bluegrass Cat, has even placed in the Derby in 22 years. A mile and eighth is a long way to go for a two-year-old, and I think it kind of dulls these horses. And I would love to see a horse like that come back in a sprint. So when he announced that Nyquist was, I said, great. But then after that, he said, and then after that, we're going to run in the Florida Derby, and that'll be it. That I didn't like. I think the 7 furlong is great, but if you start at 7 furlongs, you need a couple of two-turn races before the Derby if you're going to be fit to go a mile and a quarter, especially a horse like Nyquist. To go 7 furlongs in the San Vicente and then come back and run in only one two-turn race, it would take an unbelievable training job and an unbelievable horse to be ready to go a mile and a quarter. I'm certainly not questioning Doug O'Neill's training methods. He's already won a Kentucky Derby and knows what he's doing, and he won the Derby off of two starts with I'll Have Another. But with this horse, I would just prefer to see, if he's going to run twice, to see two-turn races. Or, but even better, a 7 furlong race and then 2-turn races. But nobody wants to run their horses 3 times anymore. God forbid you should run a horse 3 times before the Derby. And then times have really changed. You know, when you'd have horses running 4 or 5 times before the Derby. But now everybody wants to run twice. But the 3 horses right now that I'm really toying with for number one are Brody's Cause, Mohamed, and Greenpoint Crusader. Greenpoint Crusader is a horse that nobody talks about him anymore.
Nobody.
I mean, he's 30-1 in the future book, and to me, this is a very live horse. Now, I know a lot of people are saying, well, you know, Dominic Citino, you know, he's not a Derby-type trainer. He's been around all these years, never had a top horse. Well, I mean, you could have said the same thing for Chip Woolley or John Service. Mm-hmm. Even Art Sherman's been around, you know, for trained horses for 50, 60 years. Never had a horse like California Chrome. Michael Matz and Barclay Tagg were known as grass trainers. Who ever heard of Cam Gambolotti and Don Combs? I mean, you can go down a list of trainers that nobody ever heard of or just didn't seem like Derby trainers that wound up winning the Derby. So I'm certainly not holding trainer against them. But what I loved about this horse, I was at Saratoga when he broke his maiden, mm-hmm. and I was very, very impressed because he beat a horse that I thought was a really nice horse named Peroloni, who's come back and done well since. And then stretching out in the Champagne, I know it was in the slop, but he just absolutely demolished that field, and he just looked so good. I loved his stride. He just glided over the ground. And again, like I said, it was in the slop, but you know, he's by Bernardini. He's a half-brother to God knows how many stakes horses, including Algorithms and Keyed Entry and Justin Phillip. And, you know, two of those were basically sprinters, but they were by sprinting sires. He's by Bernardini. And I think Algorithms looked like he was going to be a distance horse. He was by Bernardini. So I there was a lot about this horse, you know, that I like, and he's definitely in the top three. I was originally contemplating putting him number one. You know, I'd probably get crucified for that because there's a lot of people just don't look at him as a number one type horse. But I think he's right up there. I think he's right now could be the big bargain. But Mohamed looks like the logical horse. But again, like I said, the Remsen hasn't been known to produce Derby winners, at least in the last 2 decades. and you have to go back to Thunder Gulch. And, you know, these horses, they run a mile an eighth in 151, 152. I think Thunder Gulch went in 153. And, you know, it kind of dulls. But, the horse is undefeated. And he's still fairly lightly, lightly raced with those three starts. And he's already been a mile and eighth. So I don't know. He's not going to blow you away. He looks like a good, solid horse. And he's obviously a grand-looking horse. They paid $2.2 million for him. You don't usually see $2.2 million horses heading the Derby Trail, even though you think they should. And then there was Brody's Course, who has done absolutely nothing wrong. This horse has got a tremendous turn of foot. He's got the pedigree. I love his stride. I like everything I've seen from him so far. And you know what could be the clincher is Dale Romans, and I'm a believer in the Derby Gods. I believe there's a reason, the Derby Gods have their methods and have their reasons why certain horses win. Going back to Mrs. Genter and a lot of the owners that have won the Derby, that with their time they paid their dues and their time has come. And Dale Romans, look, I mean, the guy was born at Churchill Downs. He spent his entire youth there in the same barn he's in now. He's come close. He's run a couple of thirds and a fourth with horses that really didn't look like they had any chance to win the Derby. And I think this is his best chance right now. And I just think there's a Derby with his name on it, as there is Karen McLaughlin, sort of in those two of them. But I think Dale Romans is going to win one of these Derbies. Now, he just won a race recently with a horse called Cherry Wine, who looked awesome, winning an allowance race at Gulfstream last weekend. So if I put Brody's Course on top, I hope I've got the right horse from that is even the best horse in his own barn. But I do like the horse, and I'm kind of leaning towards that, giving the edge to Dale Romans.
Talking with Steve Haskin, again, you can get his Derby Dozen starting Monday at bloodhorse.com. Steve, what about a horse like Swipe, who has been the bridesmaid to Nyquist in his last four starts? Do you think as the distances get longer, he might be able to turn the tables on Nyquist?
I do. And, in fact, every race I've seen, I've liked Swipe a lot. The only reason I'm not considering him in the top four, he'll be in the top 12, but farther down, is that he's had a physical setback. And right now, it is a question whether he's going to be able to make it to the Derby. I was in contact with Keith DeSormo, his trainer, and he's almost like started talking about, we're looking to bring him back, for early April. that's not going to do it. I mean, he's got to be back by early March if he's going to get, two starts in. So I don't know if he's going to make it in time. But, he's finished second four times in a row to Nyquist, and each progressive race he's gotten closer to him, starting with getting beat 5.5 lengths in his first start to a half a length in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. So each race he's gotten closer, and I think as the distances go on, he's got a good chance to eventually beat him. He's certainly bred for it, and he's got the right running style. And, I thought he ran a tremendous race in the Breeders' Cup. And you have to remember, too, by the way, one of the reasons why I don't throw out the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, even though Songbird ran faster, in the Juvenile Fillies, is that, number one, she's a superstar. And number two, all these horses that I'm talking about, Brody's Course and Green Point Crusader, who, by the way, suffered an ulcerated eye in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, and he came back with his eye just completely swollen. So he probably got hit with a clod of dirt somewhere, and I try to go back and see where it might have happened. So I excuse him. But I excuse all the closers in that race because of the short stretch run. I mean, the finish line was at the 16th pole. So a lot of these horses were just getting started when they hit the finish line. And so it was a very, very short stretch run. So you have to remember that before you, condemn any of these closers that didn't get up in time.
Steve, you mentioned Songbird, and her connections have been very specific about deciding against running her in the Derby. But we have also seen some exciting fillies. Have you looked at all at the Kentucky Oaks fields and any strong feelings over there?
Well, I mean, right now, just the fillies we saw in the Breeders' Cup look like the fillies. I mean, Rachel Valentino looks like she's going to get better as the distances go on. But Songbird looks, you know, she looks freakish, you know, almost like a Rachel Alexandra type. But you have to remember, too, as far as, you know, fillies in the Derby, you're really not going to see it anymore because they have to accumulate points. And the only way they're going to accumulate points is to run against the boys before the Derby. And you're really not going to see that anymore. And if you look at the fillies that have won the Derby, you know, people say, well, it's not fair to these fillies if you want to run in the Derby. Well, if you look at the last two fillies that have won the Derby, Genuine Risk finished third in the Wood Memorial, and she was probably best that day. She got hurt in the stretch and looked like she was going to prove off of it. And Winning Colors won the San Anita Derby by 7 lengths. So, you know, if they had point system back then, they would have gotten in the Derby anyway. But then you look at Rick Porter, who owns Songbird. He had the only filly to get it, really to make it to the Derby. One of the fillies to make it to the Derby without running against the boys, and that was Eight Bells. And look at the bad experience he had with her. So he's not all that anxious to run a filly in the Derby. Of all owners that you would think would keep away from the Derby right now, it would be Rick Porter. And the last time I spoke to him, I've known Rick for years, he really has no intentions of going that route. So, you know, I wouldn't expect to see a filly in the Derby. But right now, I mean, it's going to take an awful lot to beat Songbird. I mean, some other really nice fillies too. And like I said, I think Rachel Valentina is an excellent filly. So we certainly can't eliminate her. And we have a long way to go. A lot of times the Oaks fillies, you know, come along later. So, you know, Catch a Glimpse is another filly that you have to keep in mind. She's going to definitely be an Oaks filly. But, you know, they'll sort themselves out with all these races starting now at Fairgrounds and Oak Lawn, California, and all the big venues.
Well, Steve, thank you for some time today. We really appreciate it. It was great catching up. As always, congratulations again on the Hall of Fame Media Honor Roll, and we'll talk to you down the Derby Trail.
I appreciate that, Anthony. It's nice talking to you. Casey, very nice talking to you, too.
Thank you, Steve.